Near the plaza was a little cafe called La Mar Azul, next to a movie house. I sat there in the afternoons and drank beer. I used to sit there half asleep with the beer and the darkness. Only that music from the movie next door kept jarring me awake. And then I saw her, coming out of the sun. And I knew why Witt didn't care about that 40 grand.
You think you're such a hot potato as a claims manager, such a wolf on a phony claim. Maybe you are. It was perfect. Except it wasn't, because you made one mistake. Just one little mistake. I killed Dietrichson. Me, Walter Neff.
Yeah, but the police will be here any minute. Now talk.
Oh, why do you accuse
me? This is the time for that schoolgirl act. With both of us sitting under the gallows. Now, why did you shoot Miles?
I didn't mean to at first. Really, I didn't. Oh, I can't look at you and tell you this.
How'd you get mixed up with these cookies? What's the connection?
He's okay. He tells me about you.
Well, if he tells you I know where Bellamy is, he's nuts. He just picked you up to do his dirty work. He's after some jewelry. He thinks I've got it. Why don't you ask him about Velma?
I gave you some dough to find her.
Well, keep your shirt on.
Where you got her?
I haven't got her, you nitwit!
Don't, please!
Where'd you go with him?
My arm!
I asked you a question. Where?
I only saw him on the street. On the street! He grabbed me over the Kennedy!
Oh, the Kennedy, the Kennedy! Oh, you pig! You lying pig!
How could you arrest me here? This is my country.
This is where you're gonna die.
There wasn't no Miss Vargas. I was just to turn you around. I don't want to shoot you in the back.
Unless you'd rather try to run for it.
Hello, and welcome to a new episode of the... Should we say a Holmes Movies podcast? I don't know. Is this a Holmes Movies recommendation? What is this?
I guess it's a Holmes Movies special.
Yes. Welcome to another episode of Holmes, another Holmes Movies special, where we are going to be talking about film noir. Sorry, let me say that again. Film noir, which it's special because it's November. In other words, Noirvember, where people who are fans of cinema watch the films of the film noir genre. I am joined...
Or is it a genre, though?
Debatable. Controversy.
Big question. I wanted to ask you a question. You know, it's Noirvember. Do you miss Scary Movie Month? Or are you excited for this era of sultry, moody, black and white films with femme fatale and tough guys and chumps and trench coats and rain and shadows and that sort of thing?
And cigarettes.
How many times are we going to mention smoking on this episode? I wish we could smoke on this episode, but then, you know, that would be bad.
Also, by the end of it, we probably end up sounding like Michael Wincott.
Ray Winston. Let me tell you about film noir.
The old Bill and the gangsters.
Speaking of neo-noir, and I don't know if this applies really, but I did watch Sexy Beast the other day, which...
That's a good film.
Has noir-like elements to it.
Yeah, it is a bit of a noir film, but it's also...
It's a heist movie, let's be honest.
It's a heist film. It's a British heist film.
It's not a film noir.
Yeah. I am looking forward to watching some film noir films. I actually don't have that many here, apart from...
That's funny, because I've got loads here.
Yeah, I know. So I'm sort of getting through the ones... Because you have all of them over there, because it's your favorite genre. I mean, the thing about film noir is
not a genre.
Yes, I do like film noir films... But I feel like I'm not like the biggest expert on them as much as you are. I think you're sort of more on the sort of, those like Civil War lecturers that you listen to, like who sound like they know it all, they're know it alls and they know everything about the Civil War. That's kind of how I feel.
You mean the kind of lectures that I give through the Du Bois Center?
Yeah, but the same thing with film noir movies. But no, having said that,
I'd be happy to share with you some of my film noir insights, as shallow as they probably are.
Yeah, I do have the ones I do have here. Sorry to interrupt. The ones I do have here that I'm going to be getting onto at some point when I'm done watching Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers movies. Those are not film noirs, but they do make me feel good. And last week was quite.
Let's not talk about last week. Last week was in the past.
Yes,
and although you know the past is a big theme of film noir,
I have. A few films I have here. I have Scarlet Street by Fritz Lang with...
I've not seen that.
It has Edward G. Robinson, Joan Bennett, and Dan Diarrhea or Diarrhea, whatever his name
Duryea. Diarrhea.
I have Gilda, the Rita Hayworth
film. Oh, I have that too. That's a great movie.
I haven't seen it. These are all films I haven't seen. I have Killer's Kiss, which is one of Stanley Kubrick's earliest films.
I've never even heard of that movie.
I have Secret Ceremony with Elizabeth Taylor, Mia Farrow, and one of the biggest actors of film noir, Robert Mitchum. And it's directed by Joseph Losey.
What is that film? I haven't heard of that either.
And I also have this box set from the BFI, which is basically Night in the City, but with three other Otto Preminger films. So there's,
what are the other ones?
Fallen Angel, Whirlpool, and Where the Sidewalk Ends. Those are all.
I've only seen Night in the City. Can you bring those to me when I eventually make it to Denmark, please?
No. Yes,
I'm to bring them to me, as in we could watch them together. Sorry, I should have rephrased that.
No. I know what you meant. I was just joking. I've been watching The Simpsons.
Yes, well, who hasn't?
Yeah, so those are the ones I have. I do have, I think there's like another one of those film noir movies that Marilyn Monroe is in. I think that's in part of a box set that I have of Marilyn Monroe films. So I've got a few.
You mean Don't Bother to Knock or Niagara?
Yeah,
or
Don't Bother to Knock and Niagara, yes.
Yeah, because obviously Niagara is a rare example of that thing, which is a film noir made in color, which they do exist. But shall we get into what is film noir? We were joking around earlier with like stereotypes, but what for you are some of the like key elements of film noir?
Murder, blackmail, money. Money's always involved in some way.
Sin.
Yes.
Greed.
Femme fatale.
Yeah.
A dangerous lady.
Mm.
And often cities that are very often set in places like LA or cities that aren't really like, you know, they're never really specified where they're at, basically, like asphalt jungle or the big heat or something like that.
Right, right. Yeah. And I mean,
if that makes
I'm
sense.
With you. I'm completely with you. On some of those things that I've got written down here, obviously black and white cinematography, but as I mentioned, they do come in color, but mostly film noir is like a mood that's created using black and white cinematography. One of the like filmmaking techniques is deep staging. Quite often that is a big feature of film noir films. So that's like quite a depth of field. So it's not everything's happening in the foreground. And so like people like Orson Welles and John Ford actually kind of paved the way for that with films of the late 30s and obviously like Citizen Kane, which is incredibly influential.
Is that deep focus cinematography?
Well, less deep focus, but more like a long flex. So you've got stuff happening in the foreground. Think of that scene in The Big Combo, where the doors of the hangar open and then you've got the guy coming in from the back, like you've got a long set kind of it, but it's still theatrical and still claustrophobic, and it's quite often the framing in film noir is quite claustrophobic.
There's a bit of that in the John Renoir film Rules of the Game in some scenes,
right? Yeah. And I want to talk a little bit about the European influence. You've got your irregular camera angles, the lighting, but yeah, and then basically like all this stuff about like sin and you know, greed and jealousy and passion, you know, sexual passion, infidelity, you know, all these femme fatales who want the world and who are gonna, you know, break all these men to get it, and all these chumps who just want a good time and a bit of money and end up getting sucked into these like terrible plots. It's interesting that you mentioned cities, because I compiled a list recently. I was trying to think of noir films that have the word city in them or that talk about urban environments, and there are hundreds. Let me just read you a few. The Naked City, While the City Sleeps, Panic in the Streets, Cry of the City, The Asphalt Jungle, The Dark Corner, Side Street, The House on 92nd Street, Nightmare Alley, The Street with No Name, Dark City, Where the Sidewalk Ends, The Sleeping City, The Captive City, The City That Never Sleeps, The Human Jungle. There's a line in The Naked City, which is two people from outside of New York who say, "We don't like this place, this fine city."
Yeah, it sounds a bit like Morgan Freeman and David Fincher's Seven. He like lives in a nameless city, but he doesn't like it because of the sort of it's so crime ridden and dirty, and it rains all the time. So he always wants to kind of like he wants to get away from it and go to the country.
Right, and then you think about Blade Runner. Yes. So maybe Blade Runner is the last great film noir. And you think about Batman, and then you think about politics.
Yes.
You know, well,
yeah,
but we're not going to talk about politics.
This is not a political show.
But can I just talk to you a bit about the femme fatale thing? Because I think we have to kind of cover that. This is sort of problematic, but it's also interesting because I think that while being objects of kind of a misogynistic view of women, these characters are quite often strong.
Yes.
Like they're strong female characters in their own right, you know, and they prey on weak men. Like you think about Claire Trevor in Murder My Sweet. I mean, she's married to an old, doddery, weak, tiny man who's just got a lot of money, which she wants. And she preys on him in the same way that she preys on Philip Marlowe, played by Dick Powell. And he wants, you know, sex and a good time, although he also manages to outwit her using his brains.
Which he still has after heavy drinking, strangely.
Right, somehow, and having been like conked on the head a million times. But they quite often he get the better of the protagonist as well. I mean, you think about Robert Mitchum in Out of the Past and the brilliant Jane Greer.
Or even Burt Lancaster in The Killers.
Right. And you know, it's interesting for me because I think it's Mark Cousins or someone made the point that quite often the women are lit from behind, so they're literally blinding the men. But it's also interesting to me this response to women by the culture, because what happens is that, you know, most of these films that we're going to talk about are made in and around the Second World War, and what happened in the war was a lot of women went to work not just in factories but in offices and in shops and in places where men had been previously working who are now working for the armed forces. So is this a response to the idea of a strong woman? And I do think it's interesting that the strength and the femininity of these women is kind of defined by male fantasy. Like they're loose, they smoke, they drink, they dress often.
She's my kind of lady.
Yeah, say quite often dress in like a suggestive way. And so, you know, so I think ultimately, you know, you can't really say that film noir is a feminist movement at all or a feminist style. But it certainly, for a lot of actresses would have been a more interesting part to play. I mean, they also get some heavy hitters, let's be honest. I mean, Rita Hayworth, Barbara Stanwyck, you know, Claire Trevor, these aren't nobody's doing little crime movies. They want, you know, they're having a good time with it, I think. So so you know, it's I think it's sort of a point that's worth digging into. And it's just, I think, just saying, oh, the stereotype of the femme fatale, I think there's lots to be unpacked there, and I'm sure there are like thousands of dissertations out there, but yeah, so those are some of the themes, I guess, of film noir. What would you say were some of the influences? This is not a quiz.
German Expressionism is one of them, because a lot
bingo.
Of what?
I just said it wasn't a quiz, and then I made a bingo noise.
Oh, right. I thought you said no, but no, because
no. Well, no, you're right. You're completely right.
Yeah, the rise of Nazism. Yeah, a lot of German directors who didn't want to be, you know, in that country at that time, they did come over to America. So, and they took, and a lot of them, like Fritz Lang, who obviously had a very sort of German expressionist style, he brought that with him over to America. And I guess America kind of took that and just sort of went in their own sort of way. And of course, we've seen that in the Universal Monster movies. And they did take that a little bit with the set design for some films that they've made.
Fritz Lang had such an interesting departure from Germany because his wife, Thea von Harbou, who co-wrote Metropolis with him, she was a Nazi and she decided to stay behind. And Goebbels, the Goebbels, had wanted Fritz Lang to make movies for the Nazis. And he was like, no. And left. Other directors who left were Billy Wilder. He left. He was Austrian and Jewish, and he left in 1933. Otto Preminger, Robert Siodmak.
Didn't Edward Dmytryk he leave, or was it? No, he was.
I don't think Edward Dmytryk was American. We'll look that one up. But Edward G. Ulmer, and then you have other people who left before the war, like Jacques Tourneur, who left France when he was a kid, and Michael Curtiz, who actually emigrated from Hungary in the 1920s. But yeah, so I mean, European cinema has a huge influence. I also think some of these, you know, you mentioned Renoir earlier. I think his La Bête Humaine with Jean Gabin and what's her name from Cat People, Simone Simon.
I have that on DVD, but I haven't watched it yet.
Oh well, put it in your noir pile because it's basically a film noir. It has all the things we just mentioned, including like the femme fatale and the guy who gets lured into a plot. You know,
would you say Les Diaboliques is a film noir?
I think so, but that's later. I'm thinking about influences. Okay. I'm thinking about films that would have had an influence, and I think that certainly did. I think Pepe Le Moko is a very Julien de Vivier's Pepe Le Moko is a really important film in creating the style. If you look at The Third Man, I mean, the so much of the look of The Third Man comes from Pepe Le Moko with Jean Gabin, and then I guess the really big like noir film from Europe before it becomes a thing in America, I'd say, is M, which by Fritz Lang.
Yeah, that's a really good movie with a very one of the best screen villains of all time, played by Peter Lorre, who brings a certain sense of sympathy for the character, but also a lot of fear. And Peter Lorre was also one of those actors who appeared quite a few in some of those movies, like, for instance, The Maltese Falcon. The Maltese Falcon.
Yeah.
I was about to say The Maltese Funking, like, you know.
Funk. That remake. Peter Lorre really sets the standard in M for that kind of noir villain who you can't take your eyes off. I mean, think about Richard Widmark's Tommy Udo in Kiss of Death. You know, these villains who you know they're bad, you know they're psychopaths, you know they should be locked up or gotten rid of or whatever, but you find them... you find them attractive in the same way you find the film femme fatale attractive. Dan Duryea also played, you know, memorable kind of noir-y villains. But then, you know, I do still think, you know, noir happens in America. And the reason why it's called film noir isn't because we're being pretentious or the people who are making the movies are being pretentious. It's because what happened was in France during... the war, they weren't watching American films because they were occupied by the Germans. And so in 1945, 1946, 1947, they got this like avalanche of American movies that had been made during the war years. And they noticed these trends that we talked about. And, you know, according to Mark Cousins, about 350 films, film noir, were made between 1941 and 1959. So we assume about sort of half of those maybe were made during the war, or a third.
These were all in Europe?
No, this is in America. And come to Europe.
Okay.
They're sent to Europe for they're identified by European audiences because the people in America have been watching these coming out, you know, over a course of the 5 years that France are under occupation. But then the French see them all at once. And so they're able to identify these trends, these styles that are going on. And so this gets actually codified into a book by Raymond de Bourde and Etienne Chaumetin called A Panorama of American Film Noir, which was written in 1953. So it took less than 10 years for them to like identify a genre that, or a style, because I don't think it's a genre, defined a certain type of American crime movie, shall we say, or an American movie of American melodrama. If you're going to use the genres, because I also think there are westerns that are film noir. One of them is Blood on the Moon. Another one is Pursued, both of which star Robert Mitchum.
Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, is that one?
You could argue it, I think, in terms of certainly the mood of the film. And I think even the trajectory of the John Wayne character in that is very noir feeling. And in Liberty Valance, you've got a great noir villain. There's no femme fatale in there, but you know.
No, but you do have a very feisty Vera Miles.
Right. And she's always feisty. We love Vera Miles. And then I think it's interesting, these European directors, because they do have a kind of a double experience. I nearly said double consciousness, which is actually a term coined by W.E.B. Du Bois, who I have to mention every episode because I work at the Du Bois Center. But it's actually what the critic Thomas Elsasser, very difficult to pronounce.
Elsasser.
Thomas Elsasser calls double estrangement. So he's basically saying these directors aren't at home in Europe, so they left, mm-hmm. and they get to America where they also don't feel at home. And they're very attracted to a lot of the things about America, but they're also repelled by America's love of money and love of consumerism and like sort of superficial culture that's all about consumption and greed and, you know, all that. So they have
which
this...
Which they certainly are now.
Yeah, right. It's a good thing that's changed.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just think that's an interesting element. But, you know, you've got a lot of... you got a lot of guys in America who are just making these movies, and you've got, at the same time, you've got these great cinematographers, James Wong Howe and Nicholas Musaraka and John Alton, who are shooting these incredible movies and writing important texts about how to use black and white cinema. And it's like the 40s are a sort of pinnacle of black and white cinema because colors come in by this point, but sound has been mastered.
Yes, it has.
And sound and color is expensive, but sound is, you've got sound right. So you think, well, I know what I'll do. If I don't want to make an expensive movie, I'll make a cheap movie with good sound, great cinematography in black and white with lesser known actors. Mm. And, you know, and so, and I guess in the 30s, the equivalent was the gangster picture or the monster movie or whatever. But in the 40s, I really think it's these crime films, and it goes into the 50s. Because I think Westerns are more complicated to make. I mean, you get a lot of B movies that are Westerns, but you need horses and you need location and you need, I don't know, Monument wrangles and, yeah, costumes. And so you put a guy in a suit and put a gun in his pocket and you can shoot a film noir movie in a set in like 2 days.
Yeah, because you could fake a gun. You can't really fake a guy on a horse in a studio unless you like were shooting it really tightly. Well,
we've seen them try. Yeah, so I think noir would have been like crime pictures that fulfill our noir criteria would have been very tempting, and there are exceptions. I mean, there are noir movies like The Naked City, which is almost more of a neo-realist film, I would say, but which shoot on location, or The Third Man, or whatever. But so often they're filmed on sets, and they look better for it. I mean, in some ways, because you can get this kind of like expressionist stuff going on. Like one of the first great film noir films for me, it comes out a year before The Maltese Falcon, is Stranger on the Third Floor with our, you know, your friend and mine, Peter Lorre.
That is a very, 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 very underrated film in a lot of ways.
Underrated, underseen, and fan-fucking-tastic. And it's an uses hour long. This incredible like lighting and cinematography and so on.
And it has a very surreal dream sequence, which often becomes a little bit of it becomes part of film noir in some ways. You always have like people drinking too much and their mind wanders and they're thinking about so many different things.
Drugs come in these movies.
Yeah, I think like my favorite sort of dream sequence is the one in Murder My Sweet when he gets like injected quite a few times and he falls into a dark pool and, you know, darkness spills over.
There was no bottom.
I was gonna make a reference, but never mind.
What, a Big Lebowski reference?
Yeah, I was about to sort of
save it for the end.
Yes, I'll save it.
Because we're going to talk about films that are influenced by noir.
Yes.
So do you want to throw out some of your favorite films noir?
Yeah, this is the great thing about Letterboxd, is that you can really kind of compile everything, so it's all like.
I also have my Letterboxd open. Yes. Is it Letterboxd or Letterboxd? What are we saying? Can someone get in touch about this, please, so we don't sound like grandfathers?
Letterboxd. I got that new app called Letterboxd.
What'd you say about the Letterboxd?
That's a peddling.
I love that. That's my favorite line.
I used to be with it, and then they changed what... No, we're not quoting The Simpsons. Get out of our heads, Abe Simpson. What are some of your favorite film noir
okay,
movies?
So I mentioned Murder, My Sweets, which is really good.
Great movie. One of my favorites of all time.
That's one of my favorites, too. It's also got one of my favorite performances in any film, and that's Dick Powell as Raymond Chandler. Like, anytime...
He plays Raymond Chandler's creation.
No, sorry, Philip Marlowe. Sorry.
He's the best... For me, he's the best Marlowe, and I'll fight anyone who cares to disagree. I also think Mike Mazurki as Moose Malloy in that film is amazing. Mm. Like, he's so menacing and so brilliant as the sort of hulking psychopath. That is a film that everyone should watch.
Mm. My other favorite is The Big Heat, which is Fritz Lang film.
That's a later movie, so that comes out in 1953, I think. But it is full to the brim of amazing moments and brilliant performances. It has Marlon Brando's sister in it. It also has Jocelyn Brando, that is. It has Lee Marvin as a great villain, and it has Gloria Graham with one of her most memorable performances.
Mm.
And, of course, Glenn Ford, who was great.
Yeah, Glenn Ford was great. One of my other favorites is from... I'm going to save another one because that's a later film and that's sort of neo-noir, if one can call it that. My other favorite is The Lady from Shanghai, one of Orson Welles' films.
That's brilliant.
The Hall of Mirrors sequence at the end of the movie is amazing. That is like great Orson Welles firing on all cylinders. That's an amazing sequence.
Yeah, I wish Orson Welles had just spent the entire 40s and 50s instead of like moping about not getting his funding for various things, just making film noirs, because he makes some great noir movies, including Touch of Evil, which is also something we should put on our list of great film noirs.
That was my next film I was going to talk about, Touch of Evil.
Yeah, which is incredible. And also off its tits, like it's a batshit film in some ways, but it's so fun, and it features Janet Leigh in a motel, but not in the way you would normally think.
She should not stay in motels.
Right, exactly. Usually it was bad experiences.
Yes. Another favorite is The Killers, from 1946 with, I may be wrong, but was this Burt Lancaster's debut film?
It was certainly one of them.
Yeah.
He was breaking through at this point, along with a lot of these actors that were sort of, you know, rising to prominence who were in film noirs like Robert Mitchum.
Speaking of Robert,
that's a really, really good film.
Speaking of
Ava Gardner,
she's great. Speaking of Robert Mitchum, my other favorite is Out of the Past by Jack Tunneau.
I feel like Out of the Past might be the greatest of all. Well, I mean, this is a very hotly contested title, of course, but Out of the Past is perhaps the best noir movie.
It's the granddaddy of film noir films because it really sets the stage.
It's so good. It's so thrilling. It's so stylishly done. Kirk Douglas delivers a great early performance.
Late, great Kirk Douglas.
Yeah, and is so... perfect. Jane Greer, Robert Mitchum, of course. I mean, that is like gold standard. I think the other granddaddy, if you're going to talk about granddaddies of film noir, is Double Indemnity.
Yes, that's also on my list as well. And another film on my list that I really like, which also has Robert Mitchum, but he's not really the lead, is Crossfire.
Yeah, good film that. Unusual in some ways because it is... it's more of a procedural.
Yeah, it is a bit of a procedural movie.
So, it has sort of, you know, it's interesting in that regard.
It's interesting with that film because in the film, the person that's murdered is murdered because of being Jewish. But one of the original ideas with that character was he was killed because he was gay. Do you think that would have made the film... Do you think they should have gone in that direction, or do you think that was a bit too much for the time?
Well, it probably was too much for the time, but yeah, I would agree. It would have been... It's a film about prejudice, and the lecture at the end, because there always is a lecture, what do we learn today? You know, it's Robert Young chewing on his pipe and being like, my grandfather was killed because he was Irish, and it's like, you know, let's be honest, anti-Irishness is not the biggest sin that American culture has ever created. It's a thing. Don't write to me, Irish people, but I'm just saying. You know, there are a lot of film noirs about different kind of prejudices and things, but lamentably, they tend to be like, I didn't like him because he walks funny, or, you know, whatever.
He looked funny.
One of the really dark themes of American society that doesn't come up that much in film noir is racism and or homophobia or whatever, you know. So like serious issues like that. You know, noir is unfortunately an incredibly white genre.
That's true.
So, you know, that is a bit of a sad feature. Although one of my favorite films that fits into this category is Odds Against Tomorrow, with Harry Belafonte and Robert Ryan and Shelley Winters and Ed Begley, and that has some great stuff about confronting racism, and it very much confronts racism head on. You know, is a really stunning film. Can I give you some of my favorites?
Yeah, sure.
So The Blue Dahlia with Alan Ladd and Veronica Lake, one of their great pairings.
That's also on my list. It was written by Raymond Chandler. And I think he was, I might be wrong again, but was he unhappy with the film, with the way it turned out, because they changed
it? I can't remember. I think he had a lot of trouble with, I think he was difficult to work with. Let's just put it that way.
He drank a lot.
And obviously drank a lot and was famously irascible. I think he had trouble with, because he helped write Double Indemnity, and he had a lot of problems with how Billy Wilder changed his script.
Interesting.
For that, I think. But, you know, you can Google this, people. Laura is a great movie. Sierra with...
I love Laura. That was one of my...
Oh, you love it. You want to talk about Laura for a second?
Yeah, I just think that film, because I remember watching it, because I knew of it. I didn't really know anything about the plot. I went in blind, and I think there was like a moment in the movie where there's like a reveal, and it just completely like, it's one of those.
Don't give it away.
But there was one of those moments where I was completely caught off guard, and I was like, oh no, am I not going to like this movie? But it's still, I was like, oh, I really love it for that. Just that moment of like, just, you think you know what it is, and then boom, it throws something at you. And then it's just like, oh, it's fantastic. I really like Laura. Just, it's so well directed as well. It's Otto Preminger, isn't it?
Yes. And then I just mentioned High Sierra, which is we can talk about The Maltese Falcon as well, but I do think High Sierra sometimes gets forgotten about because it comes out the same year, and it's directed by Raoul Walsh, and it's a great film about an ex-con getting drawn back into the world of crime. I thought I was out. They pulled me back in.
Vincent, would you shut up? Sorry, that's my Al Pacino coming out.
Yeah, hi, doggy.
Bogart was a great... He was one of those, you know, pinnacle film noir actors.
Yeah, of course. I mean, he's in another one of the ones I think I would put forward as perhaps the greatest film noir, and that is In a Lonely Place, which is directed by Nicholas Ray and co-stars Gloria Graham, which is... it is such a great film about loneliness and about mental health issues, really. A lot of film noir about people on the run, criminals on the run. Usually they're going to get to a bad, they're going to, you know, then it's not going to be a happy ending. And I think the greatest example of that is Gun Crazy, which is directed by Joseph H. Lewis and stars Peggy Cummings and John Dahl. And that is a real thrill ride. If you haven't seen it, I really recommend it. Did we talk about The Asphalt Jungle?
We did mention it before, but no, we haven't talked about it yet. That's also on my list as well. That is a really, really good film, directed by John Huston,
with another great noir stalwart, which is of course Sterling Hayden, the great, the irascible, the frightening Sterling Hayden. As the hero, but yeah, I say frightening just because I wouldn't want to be in a fight with him because he's fucking enormous. But obviously an early role for Marilyn Monroe too. So that's another one. Sunset Boulevard, of course, we have to talk about Sunset Boulevard.
I'm ready for my close-up, Mr. DeMille.
Which is maybe the greatest film about Hollywood, although I still think that is
definitely one of them.
The Bad and the Beautiful is probably my favorite film about Hollywood.
I haven't seen that, but I really, really want to watch it.
Fantastic film. Pick Up on South Street is a Sam Fuller. I mean, it is so good. Richard Widmark plays a pickpocket who gets drawn into a Cold War spy story.
Yes.
Need I say more?
And it's also, I think what we haven't really talked about it, but in some film noir movies, there's always a MacGuffin. Like, everyone's out to get something that sort of drives the film. Like, in The Maltese Falcon, of course, it's The Maltese Falcon. And in Kiss Me Deadly, it's the you know, it's Marcellus Wallace's soul. if you get that reference, you're a nerd.
Right. There is no MacGuffin in On Dangerous Ground, but that is one of the other great noirs that I want to put forward, which stars Robert Ryan and Ida Lupino, and is directed by, again, Nicholas Ray. Really, really great film. It also has one of our absolute favorites in it, in the form of Ward Bond. I really, really suggest tracking that one down. I think you'd enjoy it enormously. Speaking of film noir that were made in color, another heist movie is Violent Saturday with Victor Mature. And
I think you've recommended that to me on another episode of the podcast. I haven't seen that, but I really want to. I think there's like, I think there was like a Blu-ray that Eureka or one of those the companies had made one, but I don't know if it's like available. It might be available, but it's probably at some ridiculous price that someone's selling it for.
Keep your eye out for it. Did we talk about Mildred Pierce already?
No, we haven't talked about Mildred Pierce. That is a very
good film, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a very good film, and I think it's based on a book, but the book is very different, I would say, from the film. They had to make a few changes, and is it written by James M. Cain?
All I know is it's directed by Curtiz. Let me look at the credits here. Writers, yes, James M. Cain and someone called Ranald McDougall. James M. Cain helped write it. I guess that's something we didn't talk about before, is the influence of Pulp Fiction on this style of movie making. So like, you've got your Dashiell Hammett and your James M. Cain and your Raymond Chandler.
I think Raymond Chandler's like the more well-known one. I think a lot of the other, a lot of other writers, it's very hard to get a hold of their work, annoyingly.
This kind of literature, I think, really was an influence. So these are just some of the films from the classic period. And then I think there are sort of films that I would call noir adjacent, like Cat People, again by Jacques Tourneur, which is a horror movie, and The Third Man, which is set in Vienna, and you know is a very different film in terms of style, but you can't really say it isn't noir because it feels very noir-y.
It has all the sort of elements of the film noir. It has the shadows, the camera angles, and you know the intrigue and the dirty dealings happening under the surface of war-torn Vienna. So, yeah, I guess you could call it a film noir.
I think so. If it looks like a noir and it sounds like a noir, you know. So do you want to talk about film noirs after the classic period that aren't, you know, that would deserve some, we've talked about Blade Runner already.
There's a few that I mean, Chinatown is one of them.
Of course, yeah. Yes,
that's the one of, I think in film schools they still teach that film because it's one of those movies with like a perfect script, and it is a perfect script, won an Oscar. It was the only film to win an Oscar out of all the nominations that film got.
Well, yeah, I mean it's like a fugitive from the 40s in that it's like such a perfect evocation of that era of not just filmmaking but of history. I think another film I would certainly say is like a love letter to noir is Alphaville. Jean-Luc Godard's 1965 kind of sci-fi film, but just the costuming of Eddie Constantine in that is so noir-y. I mean, with the trench coat and the hat and everything. Another film that comes out just a few years later is Le Samurai with Alain Delon, which is a Melville film, I think.
It is a Melville film, yeah. You are right.
And it is very obviously wearing its influence on its sleeve.
And, of course, another film that we've talked about on Holmes Movies Recommends, The Long Goodbye.
The Long Goodbye, which is spectacular.
Yes.
And everyone should watch. And then I'd say, finally, the film that really tries to do what Chinatown did and does it mostly, but a little less well, is L.A. Confidential.
Yeah, that's a film I wanted to talk about. I saw that again fairly recently. I like it. I think it's really good. I think it was made in a period where you could actually get away with showing 1950s Los Angeles without having to, you know, use a lot of green screen and build sets and stuff. And I think it was able to sell that really well. But I think with a lot of James Ellroy's work, because they're so convoluted, there's so many things going on, there's so many characters, and, you know, I think they did, I think, you know, Brian Helgeland and Curtis Hanson, they did a very good job of condensing a very long book and, you know, into a 2-hour film. And, you know, they took all the good parts and made a very, you know, coherent and very easy to follow film, even though it's, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on and it's quite hard to follow because you have to like keep your ear out and keep an eye on certain things. So yeah, I think it does. I think it's pretty good. I would say it's, you know, it's a fine film. I think, you know, it has great performances. Russell Crowe, Guy Pearce, this was like their introduction into the world of, you know, Hollywood, having, you know, made films in Australia and just coming over here. And I think the only thing that people knew of from Guy Pearce was Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Right. Well, I mean, it is an interesting one. Do you think it would be better if it had been written and directed by Robert Towne and Roman Polanski in the 1970s?
Yeah, maybe.
Because it starts to feel a bit like The Untouchables, doesn't it?
It does have that kind of... Brian De Palma, he also did one of James Ellroy's books, The Black Dahlia, which is a good book, but a very bad film. There's a lot of problems with that film. And... I think he probably would have, I think if he had a little bit more creative freedom and maybe made it a little bit further before the beginning, like before technology and flashiness kind of came into Hollywood films, I think that would have been, that would have worked out better. Yeah, I think it would have been interesting to see what L.A. Confidential would have been like in a different director's hands. But that's not saying Curtis Hanson didn't direct the film, you know, badly or anything like that. I think he did a good job with it.
And so I think finally to, just quickly a note for Sin City, that's a great pastiche of noir elements. But I think we should finish up and just talk about the Coen brothers briefly, because they do have a couple of loving nods to film noir. I would say Barton Fink has got some noirish elements in it. And
is one of them as well. Their first
Blood
film.
Simple. Well, I think Blood Simple is a straight up film noir. I think Blood Simple is in the tradition of Edward G. Ulmer's Detour. I mean, it's a classic American violent tragedy. And it's filmed in that, you know, with those sensibilities, you know, using less well-known actors and you know, stripped back cinematography. I think it's again another one of those fugitives from the classic noir era. And then I think The Big Lebowski carries so many of the film noir elements that we talked about. It has a femme fatale, it has an old crippled a man who she preys on. It has a chump protagonist who sometimes somehow manages to outwit the bad guys. It has, you know, a convoluted plot. It has sex. It has drugs. It has alcohol. It's set in Los Angeles. It has, you know, all this stuff going on.
It's got bowling. It's got bowling.
It's got bowling, and so it has this, and it's funny. So it takes this genre. It could be, you know, you could take all the laughs out of The Big Lebowski, and you'd have a noir film.
Yeah, I think I would say in like the 80s and the 90s, there were a lot of neo noir films. Like, you know, there was like, you know, Chinatown, Body Heat, Blood Simple, like films like that, and, you know, ones that were very sort of flashy but still had like noir elements to them and stuff. I think like the latest,
there was that film you mentioned recently with Denzel Washington,
Devil in a Blue Dress. Yeah.
Anyway, look, we've thrown about a million titles at people, but this is just to say we love this. We love film noir. And will you put these together in some kind of a list?
I can
the films
that.
We've mentioned. I've also got a list on Letterboxd called Noir and Noirish that people can look at. We can maybe like, you know, put some films in show notes, but this has been fun.
Yeah, it's been fun. No, I mean, I want to watch these movies again now.
Yeah, I know. I really want to watch. Hopefully the plan is that I'm going to try and travel to Denmark for Christmas. And so maybe when I come, we can watch some together, but until then, you know, enjoy Noirvember, people.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Watch some films you haven't actually seen before.
Yeah, and I think the thing about film noir that's quite good for people who are less less, I wouldn't say interested in, but like maybe less engaged by classic cinema, is that they're really cool. They're often quite short and they're fun to watch. You know, they're engaging stories. They move along at a real pace. So if watching, you know, a 2 hour, you know, Jean Renoir film from the 30s isn't your thing, try an hour and a half of Fritz Lang and see how you get on.
Mm-hmm. It also seems like with the noir genre, well, no, I'm going to call it noir films because it's not a genre now that we've been talking about it. Yeah, I feel like it's one of those, you know, aspects of films I don't think is ever going to go away. There's always going to be, you know, films like, you know, musicals and westerns, they've kind of come and go a little bit, but I feel like noir is something that's still very prevalent. You know, recently we had, you know, films like Under the Silver Lake, which is a love letter to Los Angeles and the noir genre. So I feel like it's still...
Yeah, and Motherless Brooklyn too.
Yeah, which is on Netflix now, Danish Netflix. So I'm going to give that a watch, which I've been...
Oh yeah, you'll enjoy that.
Yeah. So I feel like the genre, I mean, not the genre, the it will endure.
You can call it a genre if you like. I'm just being obnoxious.
I feel like if I say it, like it's a genre, ow, like a V-chip or something.
No, I'll just follow you down a dark alley and walk out alone. Anyway,
like your style,
on that cheerful
dude.
Note, shall we get out of here?
Yeah, let's get out of here. I gotta go follow a lady with a bag.
That's not good.
I was trying to make like a film noir. Like...
I was saying you should go and like sit in an abandoned cafe and smoke cigarettes and look out of the window and go, she left me on the train platform at 4:45 and I've never been the same. So I don't know. Yeah, don't follow people.
Yes, because that's
go
creepy.
Go and moodily sit somewhere with a hat.
Yes, and you know, particularly a place if it's playing jazz in the background.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
There's a bar here called the Annoying Trumpet.
Have fun.
Yeah, have fun, guys. Yep, this has been Holmes Movies Noir Special. Yep, you can follow us on Twitter. Send us an email at holmesmoviespodcast@gmail.com. Holmes Movies Pod, that's our Twitter name. I'm also on Instagram. Not really on Instagram at the moment because I'm trying to have a little bit of a social media detox.
Good idea.
Because last week was a little bit overwhelming for obvious reasons.
Too much hashtags. What do you need, kid? Is a bit more fresh air. Get out there and smoke some cigarettes.
Okay, go home. But in case you're interested, your husband was murdered. Somebody's been dumping thousands of tons of water from the city's reservoirs, and we're supposed to be in the middle of a drought. He found out about it, and he was killed.
Just think it was only your husband you wanted to kill.
Why don't you try to understand? George was supposed to take care of Arthur, but he lost his silly head and shot Broom.
And what about me?
Oh, we could have gone off together.
Into the sunrise, you and me, or you and Crispy.
What are you trying to do? Force a confession out of me?
You've been holding out, and I want to know why. It'll be easier for you if you tell the truth.
What difference does it make what I say? You've made up your mind I'm guilty.
Are you?
Don't tell me you have any doubts.
Yes, Angel, I'm going to send you over. Chances are you'll get off with life. That means if you're a good girl, you'll be out in 20 years. I'll be waiting for you. But hang around. Always remember you.
You do such wild and unpredictable things.
Don't be silly. You're taking the fall.